Welcome to this podcast based on the Junior Cycle SPHE textbook, My Wellbeing Year 1, hosted by Mentor Books. Our SPHE authors, Fiona Chambers, Anne Jones and Anita Stackpool, share, consider and delve deeper into their experience and knowledge of teaching SPHE in the Irish post-primary classroom. Hi, I'm Trasa O'Mahony, editor with Mentor Books. I've worked with these three authors on other SPHE titles, such as our Senior Cycle textbook, It's Your Wellbeing, and our previous Junior Cycle series, Minding Me, My Wellbeing. Given the noise around the introduction of the 2023 Junior Cycle SPHE specification, our authors really wanted to make the path of teaching SPHE as smooth as possible for their fellow teachers. And I knew it was a great idea when the authors first mentioned the idea of a podcast for new, young, old, experienced, inexperienced, and any other category you can name of SPHE teacher. They'd be mortified to say it themselves or even hear it, but our SPHE authors are excellent at their jobs, so they're well worth listening to. So we sat down with Anita and Anne. Fiona joined us later by Zoom to give us her thoughts, and they combined their hands-on teaching experience with their own research findings to give answers to questions raised by SPHE teachers. Take a listen and see what you think to these four episodes. There are more resources such as PowerPoints, schemes of work, and all information from our accompanying teacher resource book for year one that can be found by going to our website, mentorbooks.ie, choosing digital resources, SPHE, and My Wellbeing Year One. So we hope you enjoy it and get some useful information all at the same time.
Hello and welcome to My Wellbeing Podcast. My name is Anita Stackpool. I've been working in the area of social, personal and health education for 20 plus years.
And I'm Anne Jones, and since 2007, myself, Anita and Fiona Chambers have been publishing in the area of social, personal and health education. You may be familiar with some of our well-known publications at Junior Cycle, Minding Me and Minding Me, My Wellbeing, and then at Senior Cycle, It's Your Life and It's Your Wellbeing.
I'm Fiona Chambers.
So I had taught it and prior versions of this subject area since 1995, but I began to work on SPHE with Anita and Anne when we taught together in Carrigaline Community School. So we basically have worked through all of the curricular iterations of SPHE since 2003. We play multiple roles. So Anne is a current SPHE teacher, as is Anita. Anne has also been the National SPHE Coordinator, and I have been an SPHE teacher. I'm currently a teacher educator, and I'm also a design thinking coach. So there's quite a mix of talent in our group.
Episode 1. This first episode covers a lot of ground, including, but not limited to, the differences between the previous SPHE course and this new course introduced in September 2023. Can a teacher learn to love teaching SPHE? Can you teach the course in the time allotted? What takes longer to teach than you expect? How much group work is enough? SPHE homework, yes or no? The use of walking debates in the SPHE classroom. Is there much overlap between the old Junior Cycle SPHE short course and the new course that was introduced to first years in September 2023? And what are the main differences?
Well, I suppose the main difference really is that we now have four strands, right? And we have understanding myself and others, making healthy choices, relationships and sexuality education, and then emotional well-being. Now, all of those terms will sound familiar to teachers because they're really reflective of what are other specifications have gone before, mm-hmm. basically. So that now is where the class is going to be based, in those four strands. And then as you're working your way through your scheme for the year, teachers will find that it's interwoven with the whole concept of creating awareness in the students, the dialogue, and then of course we have the reflection, because the reflective practice now is really important in this new specification, and that in turn will lead to action through the classroom-based assessments.
For experienced teachers of SPHE, you will be familiar with many of the topics that are in this new specification. The same content has been used, but under different headings, like Anne pointed out, like topics such as bullying, friendship, goal setting, relationships. the activities you've used in the past and methodologies you've used in the classroom are still very relevant to this new course. What is different, though, is that it's more exciting in this new spec as we are addressing contemporary concerns for teens that will be more relevant to their lives. So it's really a very exciting change.
Well, I suppose really there's obviously there's title differences, but there's probably very little content difference. So if you're a teacher who's been teaching SPHE for the last 10 or 15 years, then yes, of course, there will be headings that are different, but the actual content and, you know, will be similar to what you've already been teaching. So it's not a case of, oh, I have to learn everything new again, because everything you have in your toolkit, as it were, you will still be able to pull that out for the new course and the new specifications. And probably, I don't know, Anita, it's probably a bit simpler in that there's only four strands.
No, I don't think the title of four strands is simpler. At the start, I found it complex because if you look under four strands, the learning outcomes were very long.
Yeah,
so you had to kind of go, what exactly are they asking me here? But when you delved into it further, you did see the connection with the old course. So that's the reassuring part, is like, you know, the content has just changed headings, changed terminology, changed kind of statements. But the real work to be done is basically the same. But this new course is better.
But and the learning outcomes, I think, give more autonomy to the teacher, actually. And I think that's probably really good, depending on, you know, the students that you're teaching, and depending on maybe the issues that you might know are prevalent to them in their lives, basically. So yours might be very different to mine in my school, but we can still both teach the new course.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And if we can look at the same topic in all 3 years and make more age appropriate stepping blocks, you know, just, you know, while there's so many learning outcomes, we can pluck them and decide which part needs to be done now at this time in their lives for the students. And we can really build on it every year.
And that's probably one of the best parts, actually, about the new course, is the fact that we can make it age appropriate for our students.
Yeah.
In your previous answer, you mentioned reflection. What does reflection actually mean in the context specifically of SPHE?
Right, reflection is when you have a chance to really investigate information that you've been given. The student is given an opportunity to really discuss a topic and to really see all angles of it and to make suggestions on it and to work with their friends to see what their opinions are on it. So reflection is a great learning opportunity to see what methods you can use to help you with difficulties or to help your friends. Reflection is also a great springboard for maybe doing some big events in the school, raising awareness about particular things. So reflection is kind of like the word I'm trying to get is... It's the empowerment of taking action with something that's relevant to your life and having the skills to do it.
Do you think a teacher needs to be drawn to SPHE in order to teach it successfully, or is it a subject that you can actually grow to enjoy teaching, possibly even to your own surprise?
Well, I definitely think it's something you're drawn to, because I am drawn to it. Okay. Well, will I tell you why I'm drawn to it?
Go on, right.
So, well, I know I'm drawn to it, not that I think. So I think it's something that you feel strongly about, that you think is important to divulge, teach, discuss, get the lid open, get people to get over stigma, to get over shame, to get over, like, not knowing what's happening to your body, and also not knowing how to deal with the change that are going on in a way that's, you know, not being so embarrassed or not to just feel bad. So I think it's a lovely chance to say to kids, you know, here's a chance to talk about this now and just, you know, get comfortable talking about it. So I really do, I do tell my classes that I like teaching SPHE, that I want to teach SPHE, that I really want to teach them sexual health stuff. I really want to teach them how to deal with bullying. And I really want to let them know that the stuff that is bad, but, like, you know, having strategies to cope with it and being able to talk about it is the way to deal with it. So I really do feel drawn.
Yeah, but I agree with everything that you said. However, if I look at the question, it said, are you drawn to it, or do you become to enjoy it and want to do all of the stuff that you said? And I think a lot of the time that teachers arrive at SPHE through their timetable. if I'm honest.
That's true.
Okay, but I am at it in my timetable and I'm actually really enjoying it. And I want to teach the young people in front of me for all the reasons that you have just said. Because that's exactly where it's a cultural shift as well with regard to education and how we talk about our feelings and being able to express them. And that's SPHE when it's done right, enables and empowers, like you said earlier, our young people to be able to do that. So I think a lot of teachers come at it sideways, as I'd say, as opposed to, oh, that's what I'm going to do.
That'd be a very interesting statistic to come across, wouldn't it?
It would. But I'm just saying that I just think that you do it for all those reasons that you've said. But as a teacher, I've probably come at it because I was got it on my timetable and, oh, I actually enjoy this. Oh, I really think this is important. Oh, I want to find out more. And then when I want to find out more, I do my CPD, I find out other information, etc. So that would be my take on it.
We do agree,
but we agree slightly different.
Is it possible to cover the new JC SPHE course in the time allotted to it?
Yes, I think so. I mean, obviously it depends on what time is being given in the school. But I mean, if they're giving the 200 hours, which is what's the recommendation, then it is possible to do it. Obviously, it will depend on how that configures over the 3 years. So in some schools, I know that they probably would weight it maybe in the first and second year, you know, and third year then can be omitted. That's not necessarily best practice because, you know, we know in third year with the exams and everything like that, that actually our emotional well-being is a really important part of that. And the management of stress, our time management, our goal setting. So, yeah, we have a scheme done to match the book. And I suppose our scheme will go over all of the 3 years and set out the relevant amount of hours, basically. So to go back to your question, to answer it, yes.
Which parts of the course inevitably take more time to get through than you planned?
Well, I plan it, so I don't find it takes more than I planned because I think it's key. So I think getting the atmosphere, getting the culture right is something that needs investment and it does need time.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think what you're really talking about is trust, actually.
Yeah.
That if there's a trust between the students and the teacher, then you're actually going to have a really good SPHE classroom, you know, and that's why we'd always say that you wouldn't really teach RSE, Relationships and Sexuality Education, until after Christmas, until you actually have that relationship built up, like you said, because that takes time. And not every student is open to that piece initially, especially in first year when they're 12 or 13, they've come from primary school, they're now in secondary school, you know, probably hundreds more students, you know, how many, 10, 12 teachers. So it's a huge piece. And like you said, it's about belonging and that takes time. So you do have to invest it to ensure the integrity of the course and what you get done with your students. You probably do need to invest, like you said, time in that.
And like that's why we deliberately put suggestions on how to go about doing really decent icebreakers in the TRB, the teacher's resource book, where we're really saying, you know, spend time on this, think about how the kid is feeling on their first day of school, think about how scary it is to be in a class group and be told to say, what is your name, or my name's Anita, Anita Apple, and had a slagged afterwards been called Anita Apple, or, you know, the mockery that can come with it and the total exposure. Whereas with the icebreakers, it's great to give them time to talk to each other. They'll tell more to each other than they will in the class group setting when everyone's looking at them. So spending time with the icebreakers is essential. And spending time with the group work and making sure that you really plan your group work well and really observing how they're interacting. It's a great opportunity for looking at different learning needs as well to make sure there's the integration, like we said, the belonging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like you said, the planning of the group work is really important. And I know there are some, I think the PDST have some really good resources around, you know, getting your group work up and running, because group work is not simply just going in and putting people into groups of three or four and off we go.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be planned. The dynamic within the group is really important because maybe you don't want certain students to work together, and you have to, as the teacher and as the facilitator, it is your responsibility to be mindful of the well-being of all the students. And maybe your plan of where students are put in a group, you know, can impact a student's well-being. So if you are aware of anything like that, you know, how you put them in is very, you can easily do it, and no one needs to know what you've done by the numbers, or by if you're calling them by name, you know, apples, oranges, bananas go together, or whatever it might be. But you do have to do that. But and group work is really, really important part of SPHE throughout the school, like not just for first years.
It's fun.
I think, you know,
it's fun. I love the group work.
And the kids do.
Yeah.
If it's done right, the kids love group work.
Especially when it's sunshine, they go, are we going outside?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do some group work.
So how much time roughly do you think should be given over to group work per SPHE class?
Oh, it depends on what you want from your group work. It depends on...
their topic as well, I suppose. Yeah.
It depends. That's a hard question to answer. And it also depends on how much skill you have in it. Because at the start, you might make a mess of it. And which one group might work very well with you. Another group, the same topic might just be a disaster. It's dynamics and stuff. So, like, you know, it's kind of a case of getting the handle of group work first. Setting very clear...
ground rules.
Yeah, so the ground rules would be very essential to group work, where you've given students a voice and you're saying, look, we're going to agree something here, and you know, it's very important that we get across what we want to achieve with this group work. So, you know, group work doesn't happen in isolation, but it really requires a lot of preparation and a lot of people to be, both teachers and students, feel comfortable with it and familiar with it, I think.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a hard and set rule about it. Like, I mean, I know the whole concept of SPHE and experiential learning is very much, I suppose, part of SPHE. However, there might be topics where there is no group work happening, and that's perfectly okay too. So it would be really bad, I think, for a teacher to go in and to think that every single lesson I must have group work, you know, and therefore... if, you know, trying to make any activity like relevant to a group work activity, when that isn't necessarily what it's about. The group work has to have meaning.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I'm just thinking, like, even the ground rules, Anita, like, what would you be thinking, like, for your class, what would you do for that?
Well, it's about kind of making people feel that they can contribute, and that when they do contribute, they'll be respected. And that, you know, they won't be mocked, they won't be shamed, they won't feel bad having made an effort. There is the fear since COVID, I've noticed, where kids have become very quiet and withdrawn because they're not sharing in class so much.
Yeah.
So the group work is an opportunity, an invaluable opportunity to get them talking, to get them working with each other, to get them sharing, but to also feel that if I share in this group situation, I'll be respected. You know, I feel like what I've said will be, you know, will be heard, and I can contribute. So I really think
the safe place,
and the value of it for the individual.
And I'd always include myself in the ground rules. I don't know if you do that or not. Like, these are ground rules for our class, not just for you the student, but me the teacher as well. I'm part of this. You know, I don't know if you do that or not.
The ground rules, I do include myself, because you want to feel part of it. But you know, you're still coming across the facilitator and, you know, in charge. But you are saying these are normal rules. Of course.
Yeah.
And like, to respect me, and you respect me, I respect you. So it's kind of like, and respect the teacher too, you know, and we respect each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also very reassuring for kids with special needs to know that these ground rules are in place in group work, to know that they are being taken care of, that they feel safe. You know, if you speak, don't get away from the whole of don't interrupt. It's kind of like, listen when somebody speaks. Everything's positive, you know, about, you know, interaction.
It's like the one voice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, and if you have one voice, it's either my voice or it's your voice as a group. But it's not a case of we're all talking over each other, because then nobody is learning, actually. And I suppose, you know, again, it's important that I suppose they feel safe. In what they're saying. And one of the areas that we should really speak about too when we're talking about this is the whole idea of child safeguarding in schools, and that policy. And I mean, I know I would always let my students know like what the designated liaison person is in the school. I would ask them who it is, because they need to know that. They, you know, where it states outside the office, you know, in our school it's in the office, other schools might be somewhere else, but generally it is the office where the DLP is. What does that mean? And I will always spend time explaining to them what the child safeguarding policy is in the school. Like, why, you know, what's the purpose of it? Because sometimes they will hear the language, but they actually won't understand the concept. And so I will explain it to them. And I will actually say, you know, that I have a responsibility as a teacher. I am a mandated person with regard to this. And that then will link in with my ground rules, actually, because I'll always bring it up under the ground rules, under confidentiality.
Yeah.
And saying that, like, there are limits to the confidentiality, that while we're all here in this space and we're all here and what happens and stays in the room is in the room, unless that I feel that anybody is at risk,
yeah,
or someone they know that's at risk.
Yeah.
So the disclosure of something that I would feel puts the student or somebody close to them at risk, then I have an obligation to go to the designated liaison person, which in most schools, and which is what is recommended and best practice, is the principal. So the students know who the DLP is. And, you know, right throughout the year, I will ask them who's the DLP in school. Like, you know, because sometimes they forget, and they're first years, you know, and so they are going to forget. But like, it's important that they know that there are limits to the confidentiality,
yeah,
and that there are certain situations that I, as the teacher, cannot guarantee that confidentiality. And like, I would definitely do that over when I'm doing RSE as well, relationships and sexuality education. I revisit the ground rules, I revisit the DLP and all of that. So that's really important, particularly with first years, I think, you know.
Just, I think also that's, you know, you could even get them to write it down in their notebooks, write in their journal who the DLP is, reinforce it with the name in the journal. But also it's very reassuring for the teacher to know, okay, if something crops up, I need to go to the DLP here, and then I pass it on. And just say what I experienced, and that's really important to know, is it, especially if you're a newly qualified teacher, what you do in a situation where someone over-discloses something to you.
I suppose, because all teachers anyway will have done the training, you know, we're all after doing the child safeguarding training anyway, like, everybody will be aware of that. And like, I have no, like, with the students, like, I am very clear about what the boundaries are, you know, and regardless of whether they're my first years or my sixth years, you know, I'm very clear around that, because I think that is a key part to creating, like you were saying earlier on, that safe environment for them to actually be able to participate in the class. You know, so I do, that's really important. And also, I suppose that leads in then to your policies, doesn't it, in one way? Like, you have to have your policies. You need to know your policies. If you're teaching SBHE, you need to know your substance use policy,
RSE,
behaviour, you know, all of those policies you should. And if you're a new teacher to SBHE, I definitely would be suggesting print them all. I know they're all on your websites, probably in your schools, but I just think actually having, just print them off and you have them in your folder. And you use them. Like, they're active policies. They're not just policies that are tick in a box, as it were, you know.
Also, like, in the teacher's resource book, we have a page in it about how to deal with people or students who disclose, you know, very explicit information that you need to report. So there is, there's always support there for helping teachers to deal with situations. But the child's safety is at core here, and we just want to emphasise that.
And like, a nice was, I love to say, like, in whatever, over 20 years of teaching SPHE, I've never actually had the situation, you know, if there's young teachers listening and they're kind of afraid that, oh my God, what am I going to do? That I've never actually had the disclosure happen within a classroom situation. The disclosure will happen outside of the classroom. And, you know, knowing how to deal, you know, in one way, that child obviously feels safe enough with you as the teacher. And your most, the most important thing for you to do is to listen to them, and then to go with the process that's in place around child safeguarding in all our schools. You know, and that's the bottom line, really, I think, for that piece. You know, I know that's a bit heavy now, isn't it, really? But it is important. It's a really important part, because SPHE is often where these things come up. And also, if you're a new teacher or a young teacher to a school, you're in, you know, the age difference between you and the students is closer, so therefore sometimes they feel a connection with you rather than somebody like me who's teaching for 28 years. Do you know what I mean? So like that would be that would be the other thing to be mindful of, you know.
Just to revisit the references to the designated liaison person in your previous answer, can you expand on that a bit and how it relates to a disclosure from a student in your SPHE class?
Well, I suppose the that would only arise really if there is a disclosure from a student in the classroom. And like Anita mentioned earlier on with the ground rules, right? You know, you actually explore that with the young people in your class prior to it ever happening. And like I would always say to them that, you know, the child safeguarding statement in the school, what it is, where they'll find it. Then I would talk to them about the fact that the principal, because that's the recommendation and best practice, is the designated liaison person. And they are the person that if there was a disclosure where I felt that any of them were at risk or that it was unsafe for somebody close to them, that they have disclosed this in the classroom, then I have an obligation to go and go to the DLP with that. I would never use the word report, because when you say the word report to a young person, it kind of indicates that maybe they're in trouble, right? And often if they're disclosing something or something has been disclosed, they're not, you don't want them to have that feeling, because they suddenly realize, oh, what's happening here, you know. And it's about you saying that I'll be there, I'll be with you, I'll be supporting you, and you know, you go to your DLP and your principal, you know, and you're able to hand that over. You don't go into the staff room and sit down, you know, and say, oh, Anita, this has happened, I don't know what I do about it. And so suddenly I've told the story to Anita, and Anita then might go and say it to somebody else, and suddenly this issue that has arisen and may not be an issue anyway is suddenly all over the staff room. So that's really important. It's really important actually that there's a process in place. The DLP is the person that disclosures are brought to. And the DLP will guide you. If you're a young, new teacher and you've never had a disclosure, don't worry at all, because the DLP knows exactly what to do and they will actually guide you through that process. And then they will take it to wherever they feel that it needs to go. But the most important thing is that your students are aware of the role of the DLP. You as a teacher and as a mandated person, all right, would need to report something if it came up. Now, I'm saying this, and in, you know, 28 years of teaching, I've actually never had a disclosure in the classroom. You know, your disclosures might happen after the end of a class or in the corridor or, you know, or something like that. It's unlikely that you will have. Now, I do know people who, you know, things have come up in class. And that's why also giving them, I find I have to give examples to the younger students about what I mean by confidentiality or disclosures and things like that. Because sometimes they hear the words, but they don't actually understand them. So giving them examples, I find to be very useful. So I suppose for me, that is a really important part of SPHE. And you know what, by the time they come to sixth year, they actually do know it, because if every year they're doing it. And also whenever I teach RSE, I always revisit the ground rules and I revisit confidentiality. And confidentiality applies to them and to me. And what I say by that is that I don't go into the staff room and I'm not talking, oh, you'll never guess what Johnny said today when we were talking about, you know, there's that bit. But likewise, that they're not going to the lockers and talking to their friend from another class and saying, oh, you'll never guess what Kate said today in class. And I give them those examples, basically, just so they know and they're clear about it, because sometimes they don't actually know. I don't know, Anita, does that make sense? I'm not sure.
It makes a lot of sense, I think, because it's really explaining the understanding of confidentiality. It's great. It's working from the roots, talking to kids, how to understand it, and emphasising that we need to make sure that they understand it in class. So that's definitely important to emphasise. It's also interesting, I think, to point out that there's a misconception, I think, with teachers to think that the DLP, you just go and tell the DLP whatever concerns you have, and then you think, well, that they'll go off and sort it out. But what's really interesting is that the DLP will have the bigger picture maybe for that student. Have maybe other people, say other teachers with the same concern or same disclosure that they've experienced. So it really is the the nucleus of solving the problem. Is that the word you would use?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's just spot on, Anita, and that's exactly what it is, because you know, there's no, you the DLP, that the process is there for a reason. And I suppose historically there is a reason why the DLP and our child safeguarding and our Children First Act is all there. And I suppose we have a responsibility as teachers, I think, as well, to ensure that it's implemented correctly in our schools.
Yeah.
And like you said, the DLP is the key person for that.
Yeah.
Is there any point in giving junior cycle SPHE homework in first year?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you have to look at the purpose and the value of homework. And for SPHE. So my own personal, I suppose, view on it, I would generally rarely give SPHE homework, primarily because I know how intense homework is for, let's say, first years, 12 and 13 year olds, right? And that I'm teaching them about well-being. I'm teaching them about looking after themselves. But if I'm there giving them homework based on this well-being piece, then I kind of feel that I'm contradicting myself. So I normally don't. If I do give homework, it is more of an active piece. You know, go for a walk, read a book, listen to some music. Now, that's what I do. It just doesn't sit with me, the whole concept of a young person's well-being and me giving them extra homework on top of the other 10 or 12 subjects that they possibly have in first year. And they've come from primary school where it's very set what they do. But that's just me personally. I don't know that. And obviously any teacher listening would have to make sure that they're linking in with the homework policy in their school, because obviously that is what they would have to follow. Yeah. I don't know, Anita, in your school, I don't know what you think. Or
I agree with you. I think homework causes stress. And like, the homework assignments could be something as simple as, okay, look over the RSC topic that we're going to be addressing in a few weeks' time. If there's anything in that chapter that you want to talk to me about and before I teach it, come and talk to me. Or I might say, bring in a wrapper, food wrapper, so we can look at the nutritional value or something. Something practical, something that's going to be of value in the class, that is going to enhance their learning. Not me ticking off my roll book, who did their homework, who didn't get their homework, who do I have to write a journal note for. That just ruins SPHE. The
dynamic.
Yeah.
And I suppose that brings up, I suppose, another point as well, that maybe new teachers to SPHE might find that you do have that different dynamic in the classroom. Because like you said, you're not, am I checking, have you done your homework? That's not really what it's about.
Yeah.
So you're about enhancing and empowering how they learn even. That can be a huge tool for them to learn in SPHE actually.
Yeah.
You know, how do I best learn? So if I'm coming along looking for your homework and you, because you were training and because you had other subjects to do, you didn't really do it very well, then it's not very SPHE of me to be lunchtime detention or whatever, because you don't, like, that just goes against the grain. So sometimes a new teacher to SPHE might find that slight change in dynamic a little bit challenging, because if I'm teaching them a subject, you know, prior to that, and then I come in and then I'm the SPHE teacher or facilitator, you know, there is a little bit of a jarring there. I think, I don't know.
You're right, because you want the lesson to be their lesson. You want them, it's their space. You're creating this safe space. You're creating this kind of sanctuary where you are giving them the opportunity to do stuff, to talk about stuff that's relevant to their life that, you know, you don't need to do homework for.
Yeah, and you know what the best thing about SPHE too, I suppose, is that it's a level playing field, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're all, you know, they all have the capacity to engage and to engage to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
So that in turn develops their self-esteem.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important, which is part of what we're trying to do in SPHE.
Yeah, that's nice.
Do you find walking debates effective? Are particular groups more suited to this than others? What if you like the idea of using them, but you're just not sure how to get them back into their seats afterwards?
Yeah, I actually love using walking debates, I have to be honest. But I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier about your group work and your ground rules, because they still all apply at that stage. I definitely think that at senior cycle, they're probably easier to use than maybe with the junior cycle classes. But I use them and I do like them because I think for it incorporates the learning preferences of a lot of students, because the kinesthetic learner, you know, gets up and about and is walking around. So it gives them that break during class, and therefore they often can engage better. And then, you know, the kids that like to have an opinion and to give their opinion, it gives them a different space to do it rather than in their group work around tables. But like, yeah, so I personally think it's worth it. And I get that it can be getting them back into class or into their seats. But having said that, I think you can still, you know, you just have to allow for the fact that it might take you a couple of minutes to actually get them back into their table. And if you allow for that time, I think it, what you get from the class, I think is worth it for those 2 or 3 minutes to get them back.
It can be very effective when you do have a very productive group. And I agree, the senior cycle students are more confident, I think, more self-assured to do it. Sometimes with some groups, though, you'll find that some kids will stay just with their friends. So you kind of have to reassure them, like, no, come on, are you going to use your voice here? What do you really think? You kind of try to encourage them to get out of that comfort zone of trying to keep safe. And the relationship you have with the class is going to determine how well this will work. And then, of course, sometimes it's the class itself. Like, some can be really quiet and, you know, they're reluctant to maybe even feel they can stand up and declare what their opinion is. So it really is trial and error, but the trial and error should come from you at the start of what you're going to input into it. It's not trial and error that's just going to be very casual. It's going to be something they invest a lot of time into to try to see how it works.
And I think students like them in general. Yeah. You know, but yeah. I think it is your, like, yeah, depending on the group. Like, I'd always say you can't do the unsure, really.
I said, like, really? That's yeah, unfair.
No, well, like, they can, but they have to be absolutely sure why they're unsure.
Yeah, but they're still, like, no matter where they go, they'll be asked.
Yeah, but otherwise they're only thinking, oh, that's the easy option. I don't have to agree or disagree with the statement.
But that's the opt-out thing too, Anne.
It is the opt-out thing, but I don't think some students will opt out all the time. So therefore, the unsure bit is only, and I'll be like, are you sure you're unsure?
So they're afraid to put you unsure. They're going to go, definitely unsure, because Sheila asked me why I'm in the unsure.
Yeah, exactly. So then they definitely will make a decision then. So they'll have to think about, and even with a group of friends, think that's okay, because if you're noticing, and you might notice that there's a group of friends, then you might say, oh, right. And then you might go, Anita this time. And then another friend the next, so that they know that they still have to be able to clarify why they're actually choosing to agree or disagree.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe I'm a bit mean saying that, but yeah, you think I'm mean. Okay, right, okay. no, I have to say I do enjoy them.
Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's a disaster.
Yeah, I do. I like them.